is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We're going to go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers.
We are going to follow you. Gotcha, you lead us, gotcha, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
I'm probably wrong. I am wrong on a hell of a lot of things.
And Adam Nathan.
And I think if that's the philosophy you have going into every game, more often than not, if you score more points, you'll win.
Go Hawks.
Inside the 10, the 5, and reaches across for a Seahawks touchdown.
Oh, he did just about everything there.
Off the fake to Carson. Wilson going deep for Tylan Lockett. And he makes the catch. And now on second down, Wilson to the end zone. DK Metcalf makes the catch for a Seahawks touchdown. Three receivers set. Wilson on second down. Steps up and fires downfield looking for Josh Gordon, who extends and makes a spectacular catch. Wilson with time, throws, end zone, touchdown. It is Tyler Lockett. Great at his position on third and 10. Allen's pass is picked off by Bobby Wagner.
What a play by Bobby Wagner.
Second down and 8 off the fake to McCaffrey. Allen's pass tipped and picked off. It is intercepted by K.J. Wright. Second down and 5 off the fake to McCaffrey. Allen's pass picked off. He was under pressure, and it's K.J. Wright with his second interception on consecutive possessions. So it is now 4th and 1. It is Carson, and he will pick up the first down and a touchdown.
First down and then some is what you mean. How about that?
Another Seahawks season and another playoff berth has been clinched. Welcome to another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast, still the official UK Seahawkers podcast. This week we'll go over everything that happened in the Queen City, which helped Seahawks, and what didn't happen. What happened outside the Queen City, which helped Seahawks clinch and yet another playoff spot. And to do that myself, Stuart Court is joined, as ever, by Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I'm not so bad. I ended up having a slightly larger whiskey than expected this evening. So I feel very lucid, actually, and in fine fettle.
Ooh. That could be quite a mix for the next 45 minutes or so. But yeah, the Seahawks, as I say, did clinch the playoffs. They just heard all the Fox coverage of that on Sunday, but it was a 30-24 win, Adam, and on Sunday they found a different way to make the game close and keep that one score record ongoing for 2019, Adam.
Yeah, so who kind of won when we did our results then from last week? Because I think you got it right in the sense of a big blowout in the score offensively, but then I kind of got it right with the tighter kind of filth game at the end, which it never really was. I kind of feel that we're both right in a way and both wrong in a way in how we predicted it. It was a strange old game, wasn't it?
It was a bit strange. I think if the last score had gone the other way, I think I would have nailed it. I think I said 38-17, I wouldn't have nailed it. 38-16 or 17, so the Panthers scoring the two touchdowns in the fourth quarter kind of spoilt it all. But yeah, it was a weird game. It was very Atlanta Falcons from about 5 weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, I actually felt much more comfortable and confident throughout this game than I did against Atlanta. I mean, they obviously had the Devonta Freeman fumble in that game, which, you know, could have put them ahead or very close, like kind of in the game. But I don't know, like, as soon as we scored, I think our second touchdown, I was just like, okay, not a lot's going to happen here. Like, I felt like I was just watching a game play out that the result was almost inevitable, even though, yeah, obviously, when you look at it by the end, you know, tricky to say that was actually what was the case.
Yeah. I think I was the same, but I kind of felt that way because there just seemed no way, although they tried their hardest, it just seemed any way that the team on the opposite side we're going to get anything because their quarterback is not very good. And I think he's been benched for their rookie for the last 2 weeks of the season as well. Will Greer is now the starter there in Carolina. It was weirdly confident. Well, Matt Schaub has kind of like the war wounds, which kind of panics you a bit. But yeah, it kind of always seemed that they were going to make one more play, either defensively or offensively. And like I said, it got a bit closer than it possibly felt like it had. But they end up making that one more play than the Panthers did, and it was somewhat. It was just everything was kind of strange because even at the end, it was kind of comfortable because it was like a 3.5 minute drive to ice the game. And but for 6 minutes, 7 minutes that fourth quarter, which is obviously the only quarter you can win games in, it was just very, very 2019, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I don't know, a very difficult game to really analyze because you were playing. We always do our play up or play down to the opposition standard. And like the Panthers, McCaffrey aside, didn't really look like they could give much of a fuck, if we're being brutally honest. apart from the attempted manslaughter of McCaffrey, giving him the ball every time, which I just thought was, if I was him, I'd have walked off the field at halftime. But more on that later. I've got something to say about that later on. We were obviously a team that wanted to win much more than they did, I felt.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was how it was going to pan out after we'd kind of, it would be very easy to get the crowd involved if you threw a pick early on or they took an early lead and, they had something to cling on to. But it kind of just felt like a malaise fell across the whole thing. And by the time we scored our third touchdown in three drives, it was almost a bit like, okay, let's just move on to next week.
Yeah, that's just all eyes on Dallas and San Francisco. But yeah, but like, I think that the 14 points the Panthers got in that fourth quarter is quite a bit of an asterisk because obviously half the defense wasn't there. Adam, obviously, there's no Shaquille Griffin, there's no Ziggy Ansah, there's no Clowney going into the game, and then Bobby Wagner's dinged his ankle. Quandre Diggs, I'm not sure what point in the game Quandre Diggs left, but it was around the end of the third, start of the fourth. So there is a bit of an asterisk to have, and it's something which, Pete's never going to be overly negative, but even for Pete, he's been quite positive about the long-term results of the likes of BBK and Ugo Amadi and Marquise Blair getting hefty, meaningful regular season snaps on the road in the positions they were put in, even though when they were out there, the defense wilted a little, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably more of a concern going into the game we've got on Sunday. Yeah. But, I mean, kind of defensive fortitude has never really been what this season's been built upon. So it's always very much been like, just like very bendy, very, very, very bendy. and try not to get too breaky wherever possible, and they did it again. They were bendy and not too breaky. And also they turned the ball over three or four times, which we know how much Pete thinks of that and how important that is to him. So it was a good recipe to get a win on Sunday. I feel like it wasn't like a battering like the Niners game was, where you feel like it's going to take you a week or two to recover. It was kind of like, it was almost pre-season-y for me in kind of the way in which it felt. I don't know. Maybe I was just not respecting the Panthers enough after the first couple of drives. But, I just felt like we were just kind of cruising our way through to the end. And it got a bit dicey towards the end. But it was never really in that much doubt.
Yeah. I mean, for that, 90 seconds when CJ Procise fumbled the ball in the most dire straits walk of life way, that it kind of felt like that was going to need to happen two or three times for the Panthers to get the win on Sunday. Defensively, all round, it was the old heads in the middle of the defense, which kind of shone brightest and kind of carried the rest of the guys banged up and walking wounded and the babyface assassins on the back end. Bobby and KJ did what 10 and 9 year veterans should do in a situation like they found themselves in on Sunday, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's a heck of a way to bounce back from, I would imagine, what the two of them may call their least impactful games, maybe of their careers, against the Rams the week before.
Yeah.
To bounce back with, KJ getting two picks and Bobby getting a great pick. That if ever there was a way to show other players that you're the leader, you know, you can talk all you want, but there's no better way to do it than that. And, you know, fair facts to him. That was awesome.
Yeah, Bobby got 10 tackles on Sunday alongside Adam, the guy we kind of pointed to last week who needed a bounce back, his second start in place of Michael Kendricks, who also missed a game on Sunday. Cody Barton kind of... Brody Carson got 10 tackles as well, which is, I mean, the fact he's matching Bobby Wagner tackle for tackle is a good sign going forward, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't feel like I noticed him that much in the game. No. It may have been the fact that two massive dogs in our family came over and were jumping all over me on the couch for the majority of the second half, so I was slightly distracted by having them not eat the laptop. He was obviously... Yeah, it's great that there's that depth. I'm interested to see what happens with BVK, because he was the guy on, obviously, during the draft that, you know, with the Husky link, you're kind of more psyched for. But old Brody has been great, and you know, it's good to see him establishing himself and, you know, finally taking an opportunity that, you know, he didn't really take the week before. It was interesting, though, that I heard Pete Carroll on Monday in his press conference saying that, you know, I think the last two drives they had five rookies on the field, but he kind of slagged them off a bit and said, you know, they were trying very hard, but they weren't quite there. So it's quite interesting to see. I'm wondering if that's like, if all teams are like that, and it's just such a step up from being a rookie, you know, from where they've been in college to, you know, to hit the level of maybe we just, you know, we kind of don't appreciate the skill level of these veteran guys that are just so good. But I thought it was quite an interesting comment that he made, because it's quite unlike him to criticise that way.
Yeah, but I think also Pete is a defensive guy, so he kind of expects possibly different to what like the Shanahans and McVays may ask of their defensive rookies. But also there's a process that this Pete Carroll and all this staff seem to have with their rookies. There hasn't been many DK Metcalfs or... I mean, Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf, Bobby Wagner have been pretty much the most impactful rookies off the bat, haven't they? Really? I mean, possibly Shaquille?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's probably...
But I think there is clearly a process. It just had to be. It's going to have to be as well with how the injury report looks moving forward into this week as well. It's going to be all hands on deck in what could be a dead rubber. But on the offensive side, it's going to be the tweeted this when it happened. It's going to be the title of these podcasts for everyone listening. Already knows that because they're going to play. But George Fant is a red zone threat in 2019. Adam,
I mean, you can have your Nuke Hopkins, you can have your OBJs, as long as I've got George Fant toe tapping along that sideline. What more could I possibly want than that?
I mean, it's Nate Belson, is it, on Good Morning Football, who has toe drag swag. That was it is toe drag fan, wasn't it? I mean, it's a new... I mean, he's... Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, catch that's ended in like an earthquake being recorded after it. But, you know, who's splitting hairs here?
I mean, it was... Russ Wilson threw it away like he did against... Is it the Rams? The Tyler Lockett catch came back in. He threw it away in the same way, but obviously... I mean, like... Yeah, that might be my favourite part of the game on Sunday. When I realised that, one, he caught it, obviously he was out of bounds, but he did catch it. But two, that he was targeting George Fant on whatever route he ran on Sunday. But yeah, it was brilliant. But it kind of got to that on the offensive side of the ball, because Tyrone Swoops, you haven't seen anything. He seems to be more the blocking guy in Luke Wilson's absence, and Jacob Hollister skipped a few plays after bashing the back of the head on the sideline, Adam. So it was thin on all corners on Sunday, wasn't it?
I mean, it really is amazing what this team are doing, like with like some of the names that are being thrown out there. It's like, I'll give you a food analogy. It's like having like the best team or your fully fit roster from like your best, you know, Baldwin and Lockett and all the guys you can think of is like your full ball of mozzarella. And I kind of feel like they're stretching this ball of mozzarella aside, and we've got like strings that are keeping it connected, but somehow these strings are getting the job done. It's a terrible analogy, but I'm going to go with it anyway, because I'm quite enjoying it. And somehow these like strings of play, like, yeah, as you say, Swoops and Malik Turner, and I think Jerron Brown caught a screen pass at some point, was running up the middle. Like, what these guys are doing is amazing, given the lack of perceived talent that you would have said going into the season. And like they're still putting points up on the board. Like it's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was absolutely. It's the fact. I mean, there's obviously everyone's starting to talk about and point towards end of season awards, and Pete Carroll is nowhere near any end of season conversations. And the fact he's just this just seemed like everyone jumps to it too early about it being like biased against the Seahawks and stuff. I think there's a couple of First Take, I mean, or whatever, Get Up or whatever the ESPN show is in the morning. They didn't mention us to all the playoff teams. Who really cares? But there is a thing where every year is kind of something else. Russell Wilson isn't in the MVP conversation because he's got Marshall Lynch, Richard Sherman, and everyone. Then it's this because of that, and then this year it's literally there is no reason for Pete Carroll not to be. If you just look on the snap counts for the last, what, 6-7 weeks of the Seahawks, there's names that you couldn't even. There's some names you couldn't even tell what position they play.
No.
And like we're watching this team play, and we don't even know. It's it's incredible the fact that they, it's the best. I mean, obviously, it's won Super Bowls. It's when he got to the second one the year after, which, looking at the Rams this year, you can see how tough that is to do it back to back years. But this is a ridiculous coaching job from Pete Carroll, isn't it?
And bear in mind, like, this is not just like a 10-5 team or whatever. We are the number one seed in the NFC. Like it's harder to even ignore that team. It's not like the Titans, who are on the come up, and I think Vrabel's done an amazing job, but like you can understand why when you're reeling off team names you might forget about the Titans or whatever. Like it's the number one seed in the conference. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's absolutely. I mean, well, we've said pretty much last 2 years that this is a team which is going like it's going to be next year. It's going to be next year, but it's not going to be next year, is it?
No, they've done
we're kind of already back on the perch. We didn't really went down a couple of steps, didn't we?
Yeah, they've done it. They've rounded out and like they've beaten the rebuild. And you know, I think Softy on the radio is like saying, you look at the previous teams that have lost Super Bowls and where they are now and how many seasons they've needed to recover, compare it to what we've done. It's unbelievable. Like you got the Broncos, you got the Panthers, the Falcons, the Rams. Look at the fucking Rams. Like the teams that have lost Super Bowls since we did, the recovery that they've taken. But then look at us. It's amazing.
Yeah, but also the Rams and the Panthers, they didn't really have the mental scarring that the Seahawks Super Bowl loss clearly did have on most people in that building, didn't they?
Because which should have made it even harder for us.
Yeah, and it's a double digit win every year since Russell Wilson coming. It's absolutely ridiculous. Russell Wilson though on Sunday, 20 for 26, 286, 2 touchdowns, and he was sacked twice, and he knelt down 3 times. But yeah, he was pretty solid. But after a few weeks of three and a half games of it kind of disappearing, bar one David Moore long touchdown off of bus coverage, the deep ball, deep passing game returned, and Tyler Lockett, as I tweeted when it happened, his ball tracking is at an elite level. I mean, that looked like Dante Jackson's interception for about 95% of the time that ball was in the air, and then Tyler Lockett comes down with it. He had 8 catches on Sunday, 120 yards, and the deep passing game coming back, and Tyler Lockett coasting yet another 100-yard game. That's not much of a coincidence, is it, Adam?
No, I feel like that's the modern Russell Wilson elite game. Like, obviously, he used to have games where, you know, people would say, oh, it's like watching Fran Tarkenton back there, but that's not really what Wilson does that much anymore. But the way in which he played, the poise, you know, the third down completion to ice the game, the deep balls, the fade to Metcalf, I just thought he was majestic. And like, he's never going to be as flashy as someone like Lamar Jackson is now, but that's just because of the way he is. But when people talk about Wilson's an MVP, that's the kind of game that I put on like the highlight reel and say, like, you know, that's what it looks like when Wilson's playing at an MVP level. I just thought he was brilliant.
Yeah, he was. He was completely in control. There's a pretty interesting quote from an unnamed former team of him where this today, I think it is, where he said Russell Wilson's just changed because he's now, he's vicious. He just wants to go for the kill all the time. You can kind of see that this year. So there's so many examples of that kind of killer instinct coming through where he's kind of just played to a ridiculously high level and got on with it. But this year there seems to be a different angle to him, almost somewhat strangely. But
you thought that was Jimmy Graham, didn't you?
I'm 90. Yeah, it's Jimmy Graham or Earl.
Have you got the quote in front of you? Because I initially thought it was Baldwin, the picture that you put up, but then Baldwin's been kind of a bit weird since retiring. I don't think he's mentioned the Seahawks retiring.
Yeah, so the quote is, he seems like a completely different guy now, says a former teammate now playing for a potential playoff rival. He's always been one of the best. And I think he's the best footballer. Not the best quarterback, the best player. What's changed to me is his cutthroatness. He's vicious, fucking vicious. He wasn't always that way. Now he is, and that's the difference. He just wants to rip a defense's head off. It's Earl or Jimmy. As a lot of people point out, Bennett would have been more fiery with his vocabulary.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Sherman possibly, but no, I think it's Jimmy Graham. But yeah, if anyone wants to read it and see what they think, anyone listening, he just seems to have a different layer to him this year. Maybe because it might be because there's no second guessing that this is his team now, is it? Obviously, he's got the ridiculously hefty contract, but this is his team. There's no ifs, buts, and maybes. Even with Bobby on the other side of the ball, this is Russell Wilson's team. It lives and dies. Maybe that's kind of added to his arsenal, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, he was given a big contract, and there were, I think it was fair that you could question whether it was going to be fully worth it. We were discussing with people who know a lot better than us in October last year, questioning whether it was the right thing to do. And it turns out that it has been in droves. Amazing. He's turned out to be cheap.
Yeah, but also, so is Tyler Lockett. Obviously, Paul Richardson's been placed on there, and it looks like his time in Washington is at an end. And
bring
he's
back.
Been injured for most of the last 2 years. Obviously, there's not much going right in Washington. So, yeah, everything. There's not many moves that the Seahawks can second guess. There is a couple, obviously, but yeah, Tyler Lockett and paying Russell Wilson. At the time they pay Russell Wilson, maybe could be something to point to as well. Chris Carson had another 100-yard game on Sunday, 133, two touchdowns of 23 carries, another 1,000-yard season. I don't know, it's back-to-back since the first time since those Super Bowl seasons with Marshawn Lynch. But it's been a weird season with Chris Carson, but he's got a very good chance of topping 1,200 yards. Not many Seahawks running backs have ever done that, Adam.
No, I thought it was great. The two touchdown runs showed off really like exactly what the Seahawks are looking for in a running back. You know, bounce outside and be strong and then pound out the middle and be a tank doing that. So I thought it was awesome. Maybe is one of his best all-round performances of the season. Obviously very stable with the ball. Now you never know if that's going to last all the time, because he obviously has more of an issue with fumbles than some previous running backs have had. But I'm not sure that's an issue you can necessarily fix. But if he's going to play like he does, like that, then his position is going to be very safe in this team. Slightly concerned about the secondary options behind him going forward. But again, that's something that they're going to have to work out and sort out how that's going to work, because it doesn't look like a very deep group if Carson has to set out two drives because he bangs his head or something like that.
Yeah, there's not a lot of depth for certain positions, but the guy leading the charge in most of those positions is playing at a pretty high level, which is a massive reason why the Seahawks are that number one seed, isn't it?
100%. I mean, I think you can be anti-running back if you want, but I think this is much more of the year of a running back than probably last year was, and he's been a key component in why the Seahawks have done so well this year. And
yeah.
I think there's a level of grandstanding you can do to which you can deny that, I think.
He's got 7 touchdowns on the ground this year, and if those who remember 1,880 yards from 2005, Sean Alexander, he had 27, so it's weird how it kind of goes around. Anyone else on either side of the ball to pay praise to on Sunday, Adam?
I thought DK Metcalf's catch was great, and it made him look like it was like a real receiver catch, and it was kind of exactly what you want him to be out there doing. Go on.
One thing on DK Metcalf, how did Ole Miss not win the national title last year? Because they had him on one side, AJ Brown, who is putting on a pretty decent. Well, yeah, I said that before. I did say that going to the draft that AJ Brown was the best one of the three. But like, they had these two ridiculous. I mean, I think AJ Brown's already over 1,000 yards. DK Metcalf is like 180. I mean, and they win like 7 games. Yes. Anyway, sorry.
Fair enough.
Carry on.
Keep going.
Carry on. No, carry on. I'm done.
Well, I was going to say, I thought Metcalf was good. The offensive line were pretty good. I mean, we're barely even mentioning Joey Hunt.
Yeah, he's Joey Hunt is one of those like meme-worthy players every week, I think. But apart from that, yeah, he's not. Yeah, I mean, O-line isn't great. But yeah, I think Pete said there's been no like missteps from going from Hunt from Britt to Hunt, which again is flashing lights if you're just in Britain you might want to get in touch with some realtors in Seattle if you're just in Britt. But
who was the center they had 3 years ago that they signed?
Drew Nowak.
Was it Drew Nowak who was just abysmal?
Started the season, yeah.
Yeah, and he was killing them, them. And, like, he's not killing them, Joey Hunt.
No, no.
And that's all you can ask for him.
Yeah, but, yeah, I think there is legitimately the only thing is that he's having one play every week where he just gets bulldozed before the ball's even left his hand. And it's,
yeah.
But it's if those plays don't end in an injury or a turnover in six or immediate score for the opposition, then it's fine because the other 55-60 snaps he's having are as solid as to be expected. And as Pete said, there's no drop off, and it's kind of there's no glaring drop off, and it's not. I mean, when Justin Britt went down 6 weeks ago, it was kind of like, well, that's it. There's going to be 75,000 sacks coming, and the Seahawks is going to be waylaid. But again, with all the injuries and all the next man up of this year, it's kind of not materialized.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think for me, the defense with the Trey Flowers, man. DJ Moore had a 100 yards game, his first 1,000 yard season, so he's legit. And obviously, Christian McCaffrey is probably the best all round running back in the league. I think he's it's 15. It's like the Lamar of running backs. Every time he gets the ball, it's probably going to be 7, 8, or 10, 15 yards every time he touches the ball. But Trey Flowers is, there's nothing going deep on his side. I mean, Akeem King come in and play well on the opposite side, but Trey Flowers was an afterthought 2 years ago in the draft, and it was a safety for a pretty porous defense, and he was switched by the Seahawks out to cornerback, and he is ascending rapidly. I think next year, another 6 months of off-season work and read about, it could be a pretty intimidating 1-2 punch, because as Shaquille Griffin said a few weeks ago, the team's going to run out of places to throw the ball on this Seahawks defense, and that says a lot for how Trey Flowers has played. I think he's having a proper season.
Yeah, I could not agree with you more.
But the Seahawks are clinched, and obviously big part of that was because of what happened with the Dallas Cowboys blowing out pretty much by halftime the LA Rams, even though Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup had about 12 yards between them, the Cowboys just blew the Rams away. And then Matt Ryan and Julio Jones hooking up just on a fourth down play at the end of the game. It's got a shock win for the Atlanta Falcons in San Francisco, which sealed the Seahawks' spot in the playoffs. Here is Pete Carroll, before we move on and talk about Week 16, here's Pete Carroll talking about how they found out and how they tracked all the happenings in Santa Clara.
Information at their fingertips. How weird or unique was that scene on the tarmac yesterday and having a crowd around one Wi-Fi connection to find out the 49ers. That's kind of bizarre.
Yeah, it was really a moment. It really was for a club, you know. We got delayed on the tarmac, and so we were waiting, you know. It took a long time, and everybody was kind of fiddling around with their stuff. The doc had the game on. He had the Niner game somehow. I don't know. He had some kind of super Wi-Fi. I don't know what was going on. But as it turned out, as that game all of a sudden jumps back into the, you know, it can go either way. Everybody, you know, got going, and there was a total mesh of bodies leaning in trying to see it, and everybody's yelling, don't even flinch, because you got, you know, he's got this unique Wi-Fi that nobody else had. We don't know how that worked. And then they scored, and then they took it away, which was, the place went nuts, and then they took it away, and it was pretty crazy. And about then, the plane started to, like, they started revving up. It's about time to go. They have the fourth down play, and they rule it. He didn't score, you know. And everybody, oh, you know. And then they showed the stop action shot of the ball. Looks like it was across the goal line, and the plane starts moving, and the Wi-Fi freezes. And all we had was that pick. We had that pick. It was stayed on his laptop. And that was it. We didn't know what happened, you know. And so we actually got going, and I think it actually was Brad Idzik's app. That he passed, he said, hey, they scored. And Steve Shimko grabs the phone and goes crazy. Hey, they scored. You know, they overruled it and all that. So it was a blast. It was really fun. And we had already announced that the Rams were you know, falling. So it was just a really cool moment for the team, and we had a lot of fun with it.
My Wi-Fi on a plane in 2019, Adam, $1 million industry, and they don't have Wi-Fi on their team jet. That's a strange thing, isn't it?
Very odd, considering I got it on my Lufthansa flight to Munich last week.
Yeah, it's very, very well. I think they've just changed airlines, and they haven't caught up with anything yet. But yeah, the Seahawks are in the playoffs. So Adam, this Sunday, Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals and Larry Fitzgerald possibly one last time come to Seattle. But even though it's a dead rubber, it's going to be a bit of an awkward one if the Seahawks want to keep their destiny in their own hands, as the cliche goes. I don't...
Well, it's dead rubber for them, but it's far from it for us. If you think about the number one seed, this is a must-win game.
I think the division's the most important thing, I think.
So what? If we lose this and beat the Niners, we win the division anyway?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I still wouldn't want... Yeah, if you can get me the two seed, just that bye week, because that Niners game is going to be an absolute bloodbath, and we're going to need a bye after it.
Yeah,
we're going to need a bye, so I think this is a big game. Like, obviously, it's not in a vacuum, it's not, but in context of the season, I think this is a really important one to get done, because you need to give yourself the chance to have at worst that two seed and get a bye.
If you're saying we need the bye, so you think the Packers are going to win their last two games?
Do they need to win them both to get it?
I think so, because... Yeah, I think so.
Tricky, I guess. But I don't know, I want to take care of business as early as I can, to be honest. Look, I mean, the Rams, I guess, they play the Niners on Saturday, don't they? So they might be in favour. So you might know even more about your destiny before then.
Yeah, also, I think I said to my mate who's a 49ers fan that I think that Niners game will play a large role in the active-inactive list on, 8 o'clock on Sunday night. I think if it is a legitimate, doesn't really matter. We've still, even if we've got a loss, we control what we do and can still get the first seed. There could be some people sat down for a week and really run at the Niners the week after. Obviously, that's not how they're going to sell it, but I think that might be how they approach it if the Rams beat the Niners, which I don't think they will do. But we said back in week four when we played the Cardinals down in the desert, and the heftiest winning margin in the season, 27-10, that this is going to be a dangerous team down the stretch and in the future, and it's kind of been proven right. Even without the addition of Kenyon Drake at running back, this quarterback and this offense is is going somewhat under the radar for what they're doing with a rookie leading the way, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to this one. I've got a lot. I think I was more confident about the game against the Rams on the road than I am about this one. I don't know why. I mean, the Cardinals are a bit of a voodoo team for us anyway. And if you look at like how McCaffrey, as soon as he got into any open space, just looked so destructive. If we can't set the edge, if you've got no Clowney, no answer, Clowney and Wagner didn't practice today. I just saw Bolcondota say on that their Twitter. But they didn't practice. And if we can't set the edge and Murray's just allowed to get outside, I mean, he looks healthy again from last week. He could cause serious, serious problems. And if they're putting together 5, 6, 7 long drives and not giving us enough time to counter that, it could be really tricky.
Yeah, Akeem King against Christian Kirk is petrifying. Christian Kirk is going to be the next big name wide receiver in this league. He's a proper. And Kyler Murray gets the ball to him pretty easily without Larry Fitzgerald and Kenyon Drake. I mean, Kenyon Drake had 4 touchdowns on Sunday and was about a yard and a half short of 5. So they do. It's not as complete, like, exclusively air raid as probably most people expected. But, I mean, Kyler Murray's not turning the ball over. He's starting to run more. He's got, was it 3,000 yards passing and 500 yards rushing, I think. The only quarterback to have that in the NFL this year, even with all the MVP highlight package that Lamar Jackson's putting together in Maryland. But yeah, I'm not looking up. If we could just get to Monday morning and just give us it 3-0. I don't really care how the score is. I'm saying just survive and get buy it and then worry about them 2020 and onwards, I think.
What do you reckon will happen?
I do think we'll win. I think we've got a little bit too much, but yeah, that I don't know. Like as you said, there's always something strange. Obviously, we had the 58-0 against the Cardinals 6-7 years ago, but we've also had Carson Palmer throwing 4 interceptions and still winning in Seattle. So it is that they are a weird team. We play them twice a year, but this is exactly what I thought would happen back in week 4. This is exactly the kind of trap game prospect that was going to happen, because obviously they weren't going to be a playoff team this year, but they were going to show signs of life, and that's exactly what they did and have done. As I keep saying, but with that Kenyon Drake, and he's going to be someone like McCaffrey we're going to have to try and key in on, because he's going to be, how he goes is how this offense goes, and the guys on our defense, battered and bruised they may be, are going to have a test of their hands full, aren't they, on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, looking ahead, I'm not looking forward to 2 games against this lot next year already.
No. I mean, another draft where they have 7, 8, 9 picks is not... They don't have that many holes, and they've got an annoying amount of Washington Huskies as well. Byron Murphy, Buda Baker. I think they've called up another one. I think they called Biera up this week. So it's just going to be so many Huskies. And when we saw what John Ross and Dante Pettis have done at Central Link coming back to Seattle as former Huskies the last couple of years, it's a bad cocktail for something uncomfortable on Sunday. Defensively, the Cardinals, just mentioned Buda and Biera and Byron Murphy. Byron Murphy's had a quietly nice rookie year. They're going to be a tough get out to have for this offense, even if they are the stronger half of this team moving to Sunday.
Yeah, then they're no mugs. They may not be the perfect team, and they have got a lot to do to get better. And we're probably talking them up too much, if we're honest, making them out like the Brazil 1970 equivalent of an American football team. But I just think it's things that we're just going to roll in here, turn up and go home. I think that it's not going to be the case. So I'm just, I come at this with more trepidation than anything else.
Yeah, they are a looking at their schedule for the year, they are a proper feast or famine team. I mean, they've had a game. Well, they had 20 rush yards in the game, but then on Sunday against the Browns, they had 226. They had 266 yards of rushing, and then 40 against the Saints. So they are a proper feast and famine team. But if they are the other end of that feast and they kind of keep rolling off a win instead of having a down week, it's not going to be... I still think the Seahawks will win, but it's not going to be as comfortable and straightforward as the team rolling in with a 4-9-1 record would appear on paper, mm-hmm. would it?
No, I agree with you.
Prediction for Sunday?
I'm going to go 24-17 Seattle.
Yeah, I did notice something earlier in the week that the Seahawks are yet to have a scorigami, so whatever the scorigami is of around 35,
okay.
I think whatever can be scorigami with Seahawks scoring 35, that's what I'm going to go for. Because I'm pretty sure 58-0 was the scorigami as
well.
Do
the listeners know what scorigami is, all of them?
I think we've mentioned it enough, but we'll mention it again. Scorigami is a scoreline in the NFL which is the first happening of that scoreline. I think it's the last 7 years. Once every last 7 years, the Seahawks have had at least one every year. I think the 58-0 was the first one, or maybe the winning. Yeah, but they haven't had one in 2019. There's been a few. I think the Rams, one of the 49ers games. I think the 49ers-Bengals was one earlier in the season. There's been a few, but yeah, it's a pretty cool Twitter profile. It's also NFL Scorigami. Website, which is .com, which is the graphics wild. Well, 35, whatever scorigami is, I think the Seahawks will win, but it's going to be an uncomfortable few hours. It's the first, I mean, after all the primetime games, I think it's the first time in about 6 weeks we've got a 9 o'clock usual Sunday of watching Red Zone and watching the Seahawks. It's a proper Sunday.
There can't be that many games on either, because you've got three on Saturday. You've got Sunday night football, and I don't know how many they've got in the first batch of games, but presumably there's not going to be too many games on at that time.
No, it is. Yeah, it's going to be a proper Sunday evening watching all the chaos and happenings earlier than the nonsense that is Seahawks going. I think one of the guys who writes for the Ringer said that the Seattle Seahawks never have a normal game, and. It kind of happened on Sunday. So I think it's going to happen this Sunday. Then, obviously, moving on to wrap up the calendar year and also the 2019 regular season with that slightly large looming game again at Centric Field against the 49ers in Week 17. So it means, Adam, that the Seahawks wrap up a 7-1 road slate for 2019 regular season. The first franchise record, which... When it's 2-1, it's pretty obvious it's going to be up there with the records. But the whole approach and process that Pete Carroll put this and his staff have put this team through has been massively beneficial on the field, especially on the road this year. The whole process and approach works every which way you look with this team.
Which gives you hope that they can go and win a road game on the playoffs if necessary. I'm not sure they can do three, because that's asking a lot of anyone. But, you know, they've given themselves more than half a chance of, if they've got that road culture going strong, then that's great.
Obviously, there's a lot up in the air. Moving on, spin in the bin and all the rest of it, Adam?
Yeah, let's go for it.
First of all, this is an exciting time. For our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
Chip Kelly's an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
See, this week's spin in the bin, maybe we will be prepared this week and dive straight in. Adam, I think you've crowdsourced this week, haven't you?
I have. I've got a couple of my own, but I'm going to start off with one that our good friend Michael Sean Dugar shouted out of, Deion Sanders. I don't know if you saw this interview that he gave on Monday. I don't know if you can find the clip to put it in, if that's doable, but he did one of those things where, like, you know when you have an argument with a mate and you've realised that you're wrong, but instead of just saying, do you know what, yeah, I've messed this up, you just double and triple down on it. And he ended up basically saying that
no fan, no player ever really gives a shit about the crowd noise or Clements makes any difference. Now, we know for a fact that's just nonsense. So I don't know why he kept doubling down and tripling down on it, but he basically said that the fans in Seattle make no difference. They're not louder than anyone else. And I don't want to be all 12-y because that can get a bit pathetic. But, you know, just look at the evidence, mate. I mean, the way in which that crowd dictated so many games in the past, we've seen it before, is obvious. And I thought it was very strange that he took that line of going, I didn't really understand it.
Yeah, I think, it was. This Deion Sanders just, I mean, he tweeted back Kevin Byard, who's a safe starting safety for the Titans a couple of years ago, saying, we saw about you playing the game, and he covers the league and doesn't realise who the players are. But as Duncan Terry, I think, tweeted, either the official or maybe myself, all that needed was the word pedestrian, and then we'd have had a new intro for 2020. Because it's exactly the same. Look, you hear it 107 times. Are we right? Are we right? That's exactly what it's going to have if the Seahawks are still playing in the final week in January. It's going to have a sound. I mean, if it's Russell Wilson, then oh my days. That's going to be the moment of the decade, 24 days into the decade. But it's just dumb. Deion Sanders is just, it's the most, if like bulletin board material could be cliche, it would be Deion Sanders, if that makes sense. Yeah, he's like Cowherd with, well, no, he's not like Cowherd. Cowherd's a, it's a ridiculous thing to say. I think it's been quashed by all callers, not just Seahawks fandom, but it's Deion Sanders. Or if he'd have said the word pedestrian, then it'd have been, I'd have probably had given him a good week, just giving us more reason to change.
Well, speaking of
pedestrian, and freshen stuff up.
Cowherd, our friend Jessamine suggests that maybe we should take Cowherd out of the bin for claiming that Russell Wilson was the true MVP. But I've reminded her that this is what Cowherd does. It's Adrian Durham-esque radio of trying to take the contrarian view, and then when it all goes to hell in the handcart, saying, "See, you should have listened to me in the first place." Cowherd stays very firmly in the bin.
Cowherd will be forever entombed. He's never coming out of the bin for a multitude of reasons. But he's not coming out of the bin. But as you say, the Adrian Durham and just a lot less red in the face, I think. Anyone else for your get in the bin?
Yes, I have got one, and this is a first. I'm putting someone in the future in the bin. Okay. I'm putting the 2021 Carolina Panthers in the bin for not paying Christian McCaffrey what he deserves after ruining the man's body over the past 3 or 4 years. I mean, what I saw on Sunday, I tweeted that it would be tantamount to manslaughter. Given his usage, I thought it was ridiculous. And if I was him, I genuinely would have walked off the field at half time because it was just unbelievable how much he was being used. It was every single play, it seemed like. He was taking blow after blow after blow. And fair play, he comes back for more every time. I mean, that's the kind of guy that you'd love on your team because he's a heck of a competitor. But, oh, my goodness, if they don't pay him, that's really going to piss me off. And it's going to spell probably the end of running back ever getting paid, I would imagine.
I think he has to be paid. He's a slam dunk to be paid because at that point their team situation could be a bit different to what it is. Obviously, they're in a bit of a state of flux at numerous positions. Yeah, it's ridiculous to use. I mean, I think they should have grabbed it 92% of snaps.
He's on the field for.
On the field for us, he's got probably 92% of their yards this year as well. But it's ridiculous. He has to be paid. And yeah, that's a pretty good one. Am I getting the bin this week? Now, I'm going to go the different way to maybe most people would. I'm going to put Shad Khan in the bin this week, the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars, who fired Tom Coughlin.
Who should be the candidate, a lot of people would suggest.
He should be the candidate, but I don't understand. Maybe it's because we saw Paul Allen in the draft room every year for 6-7 years with Pete Carroll and George Snyder, but how did he not know what Tom Coughlin was doing?
Good point.
So if anyone who hasn't, there's been, what was it not? There was a, Dante Fowler had a grievance through the NFLPA against a fire in the Jags levied on him last season. And then Jalen Ramsey's made comments, Leonard Fournette's made comments. It just seems Coughlin was finding absolutely everyone for turning up late or not doing this and doing that and coming in back overweight and everything. Just how Tom Coughlin, if anyone's watched his football life and all those America's games with those Giants teams, it is what Tom Coughlin is. But how does Shad Khan not know that was happening? How it is a proper reactionary thing to fire him. They need to change everything in Jacksonville anyway, apart from obviously the mustache Marvel Gardner Minshew. But yeah, it's, I just don't understand how that cannot be. Because like he's always reporting to me. He clearly wasn't reporting to me. It's just Shad Khan needs to get a grip, and he's very. There's a very good chance that could be Redskins Florida in the next couple of years, because that does not seem like, it seems quite riddleless, doesn't it, Nana?
Yeah, and as you say, how does Khan not know what's going on? And ultimately, like, people can slag off Jerry Jones as much as they want, but this would never happen on his watch. Like, he would never let someone underneath him, you know, be doing stuff like this. And that, not necessarily like a defense of Jerry Jones per se, but at least he keeps an eye on the whole thing. It's his company. It's my catering business. If I wouldn't let a chef just start taking the piss out of like the stuff I'm trying to serve, like, it's not, you know, like, it's my business. I have to say that for the stick Jerry Jones gets, if I'd spent $3.1 billion on it, I'd want to say in it as well, I have to say.
And also talking about this, the Detroit Lions can get in the bin for not firing Matt Patricia, despite when he was at 9-21 and 1 through his first 2 years. After then, they fired Jim Caldwell, Patricia's predecessor, after a 9-win season.
Back to back, I think, 9-win seasons.
So it's not great. And, I mean, Matt Stafford is broken. Kenny Galladay just not getting the ball with this new quarterback. It's so transparent, and there's deeper seated reasons, I think, and it's just let's not go down that road. But Detroit Lions are just, they need to, they Patricia's living off the Belichick name, nothing more, nothing less, and I think Patricia won't be the last one either from that Belichick tree. Anyone else for thy bin?
Well, I've kind of had a bin, like, in a question from a listener, Dan Cohen, who said, how does an 11-3 team, number one in the NFC, only get two Pro Bowlers?
It's the Pro Bowl. So the 2020 Pro Bowl will have all of the Seahawks who played well this year. Frank Clark has made the Pro Bowl, and Frank Clark has not had... He's had a couple of good games, but Frank Clark got, 16 sacks last year. That's why Frank Clark's in the Pro Bowl this year. It'll be next year where we get everyone, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, KJ Wright made the Pro Bowl last year, didn't he?
Yes, I think he did.
Yeah, he played 3 games, but because he had a good 2017, that's why he made the... It's the dumbest thing in the world. Yeah, they should have more. Shaquille Griffin probably should be in the Pro Bowl. Chris Carson probably should, but the AFC is ridiculous with running backs.
One more thing that can get right in the bin is today's injury report, which has just come out and did not participate. You've got Quandre Diggs, expected, Dwayne Brown, Bobby Wagner, Jadeveon Clowney, Al Woods, and Shaquille Griffin. So that's not ideal.
No. It's basically, if you're playing 7-on-7, that's our defense, and then the tackle protecting the quarterback.
Yeah. Ziggy Ansah was a full go, so that's good. Not ideal.
No, and Ty Lockett had that's a hefty list. And the hype man, he's trying to get everyone to grow moustaches. Luke Wilson practiced as well, unlimited, so it appears he could be on the way back. Good week, bad week, Adam?
Good week, bad week. Tricky one. Who had a good week? I feel like Cincinnati are trending in the right direction. And I feel that they're about to kind of salvage a little bit out of a terrible season and still get the first overall pick. Like, I think I would stick with what they've got going, because if they can get a good quarterback in, they have got talent there. The defense is showing up a bit better. They had 4 turnovers on Sunday, which isn't great. But I kind of feel like they're showing a few shoots of recovery, whereas 2 or 3 weeks ago, I just thought, this is just, you got to rip it up and start again.
Yeah, talking of paying running backs, they might have to pay Joe Mixon this year, and I wouldn't if I was them, to be quite honest. I think you could easily replaced. I think all those shoots for Curry are going to skyrocket with who they're probably going to end up with in the draft, and Joe Burrow, because he's
pro ready, do you think?
Yeah, no, he will immediately hit the ground running. He is so, so good. He's very, someone on Twitter compared him to someone. I was like, I was watching him, and yeah, he's like Tony Romo and Matt Ryan in one.
Wow.
He's so good. He's so, so good. The best thing with him, he's not got much wear on the tires kind of thing. He's only had like one full season this year, Valish. He is a proper. He should. I don't think he's the best player in the draft. I think Chase Young is the best player in the draft, but Joe Burrow is by far and away the best quarterback in the draft, I think.
Fair enough. Good week for you.
Good week for me. Well, good week for Joe Burrow, who won the Heisman at the weekend. I don't know. I think it's a good. Well, it's a good week for New York Giants fans, because I think how they handled and treated Eli Manning after the win on Sunday, it looks like Daniel Jones is going to be back this Sunday. So Eli Manning is going to finish his career most likely 117-117. If that's not poetic, then nothing else.
Well, he also
is
8-4 in the playoffs, which is often forgotten outside. That's his regular season record. Yeah. So good for him. He gets a winning record overall.
Yeah, but it's quite a bay and mob in New York and New Jersey and that northeast side of America. But how they handled and treated Eli post game, during the game, apparently, from those who watched that, I mean, imagine watching Giants Dolphins, Jesus. I think how they treated him and him getting that legitimate send off after how Ben McAdoo treated him about 18 months ago, 15 months ago, is how it should have been dealt with back then. And it's pretty cool he had another opportunity to have that moment. The only shame of that was it was a complete nonsense and tire fire of a game, and MetLife was, what, a third fall. So that's the only shame in it. But also a bad week for my Twitter timeline scrolling enjoyment, because Mike Francesa, Adam, has stepped away from his radio show. He's retired for the second time in 2 years, and I mean, he's gone from saying that Trump wasn't going to be impeached, and he just went out on the highs. No longer, he wasn't the number one sports radio show in the city for the first time in quite a number of years, and that's how he stepped away. So his presence every day on my timeline is saying something stupid is going to be missed. It's a bad week for my timeline. A few stats to keep an eye on for this week. Russell Wilson is, well, unless he has a very bad day, is 104 yards away from becoming the franchise all-time leader in passing yards. He's only 600 yards away, I think, from being the team's first ever 30,000-yard quarterback. And also, Tyler Lockett is 6 yards away from his first 1,000-yard season. Russell Wilson getting 30,000 yards in a team which is apparently runs the ball all of the time is some achievement, Adam.
A lot of yards. It's a lot of yards.
Wherever you watch the game, if you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can. I think that is all this week, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, if you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can all use your means, methods on social media, UK Seattle Seahawks fans, the Pinterest podcast at Seahawks UK on Twitter. If you want to send in your questions or anything for end of year stuff, we may do a podcast next week if calendar allows. Until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks.
They made it easy for me.
KJ's hands are amazing. His running back skills, not so much. If he would have went to the left, he probably would have had a touchdown. But he decided to try to jump over somebody. That didn't work out so well. So we're going to work on jumping over people at practice. Well, he is.